Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another program in our continuing coverage of the Casey Anthony trial. Joining me on this Easter Sunday is my wife, Jen. Jen, happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you too and everyone else.
From Fort Lauderdale, Florida, we have Bail Bondsman and the poster child for Home Depot, William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, it's great to talk to you again.
Great to be there, Simon. Happy Easter, everyone.
Is it true that you get a huge discount at Home Depot just because you're there all the time?
There in Lowe's, I mean, with this toss-up between Home Depot and Lowe's, but I think my girl bought stock in one of the companies. She did.
That's great.
Good for her.
And from Ground Zero in the Casey Anthony trial, which, of course, is Orlando, Florida, we have journalist Dave Neckel. Dave, happy Easter and welcome to the program.
Hello, Simon, and happy Easter to you and everyone else. It should be a good day.
It should indeed. And Dave, I do want to say congratulations on the Orlando magazine opportunity that you have. I mean, that is just wonderful news.
Well, yeah, thank you. It is. I mean, they obviously like my writing. So I got they contacted me and said, would you like to write for us? And I said, I'd love to. So it's a perfect job for me for you know, because I'm going to be writing about the trial anyway, and there's no reason why I can't do it for somebody else and have a larger audience.
Right, and I understand that it also means that off and on, you are going to be actually in the courtroom as the story unfolds.
Yes, I am. I'd like to say I have a front row seat, but it is up in the balcony, which is no problem because a lot of the journalists will be up there. Now, what they did is they put the people who've been covering it the most, or the organizations, the media organizations that covered it the most, downstairs, and that would be mostly, I guess, like your local TV. Certainly True TV in session because they're obviously televising it. And so the local outlets, the Sentinel, and then as it decreases, they move them upstairs. Although some organizations, like I think CNN is up there, I think Headline News, I don't know if that means that Nancy Grace is going to be there, but it's my understanding that she's probably going to be there. I don't know. But it should be, yeah, it's going to be interesting. The only thing that I like when I write now from the courtroom, I like to observe people and their reactions. And you can feel sometimes the tension in the courtroom. And I'm hoping that I don't lose that from being up there, that I can still look down and see it.
Oh, I think it's going to be it's going to be a wonderful adventure. And I'm really looking forward to reading your pieces. You know, it's one thing to watch a trial unfold on TV, and I'm pretty certain it's going to be on our TV, you know, every day. But to actually be in the courtroom and spot the things that the cameras don't spot. Ah, wonderful stuff. And you are going to be able to continue to join us, I understand?
I understand. Yes, I will. That shouldn't be a problem. The only thing is, I'm going to be very active during the week, so I should have time on the weekends. If it's a Saturday, I think they're going to run the court on Saturday. If it happens, I'm probably going to go to some of the Saturday part, you know, Saturday. But I don't think I'm going to go every. I can't possibly go every day. I don't have the stamina for it. So and there are three people involved in this one seat. So it'll be nice to get a break, and I can watch it from the house. I don't have to go there every day if I choose not to. So, but Saturday, I think I'll go once in a while, just not every day. And then Sunday, of course, is my day off, and I'll be able to be on the show.
That's great. And again, I'm sure I speak for everyone at Blogger News. You know, we are just so happy that you have this opportunity, and I'm sure it's going to lead to, other opportunities for you.
Well, I was wondering if I should change my name to Jimmy Olsen or something.
Right. Alas, neither Denny Griffin nor Peter Hyatt can be with us today. That they have family obligations, but I guess we shouldn't be too surprised with it being Easter Sunday. But I do want to, say hello to both of them, reach out and wish them both and their families a very happy Easter. Okay, I actually want to start the program on a completely different subject than the Casey Anthony trial. People that know me know that I am neither a political animal nor a religious zealot. But Easter is a time for reflection, a time to think about the sacrifices that people have made. And earlier this week, I was contacted by Charlie Daniels' PR people. Charlie had written and recorded a new single. I actually believe that it went on sale on Good Friday. I doubt very much that anyone listening has heard the song yet. That there's been very little opportunity for airplay, but I do want to share it with you. I think it is so fitting for Easter. It's called Let 'Em Win or Bring 'Em Home.
Say a prayer for Bobby. He's somewhere south of Kandahar tonight. Ask the Lord to be with him. Have his angels to protect him in the fight. He's seen a lot of killing, though he's only turned 19. He's a brave American warrior and a Semper Fi Marine. But he's got a baby girl at home that he ain't ever seen. Pray for him. Say a prayer for Sally. She's on a C-130 headed out downrange. Don't know where she's going, but she knows her young life's just about to change. She wants to serve her country, so she didn't hesitate. 'Cause in her heart she wanted to be part of something great. so she joined the army. On the day she graduated, pray for her. Oh, America, red, white, and blue. How many heroes bled and died for you? Answered the call and gave it all. And you know they'd proudly do it all again. But we've listened to pundits and fools. Now we fight our wars by someone else's rules. But even if we had to stand alone, I say you either let them win or bring them home. Say a prayer for Mama. There's someone missing in her family. Say a prayer for Daddy. There's a gold star hanging in the family tree. And the grandkids keep on asking, why did Daddy go to war? And why won't he be coming home? And what was he fighting for? And they just have to keep on saying, son, you'll understand it better by and by. And they hold their heads up higher and keep hiding all the hurt, while that bunch of dirty scumbags at the Westboro Baptist Church insult our fallen heroes whose bootstrings they're not worthy to untie. Say a prayer for Bobby and either let him win or bring him home.
Okay, I don't want to dwell on this song. I'll just say it is available on iTunes, Amazon, and just about everywhere music is sold. And I'm pretty certain it's going to rocket up the charts. Let's move on to the program. But there was no courtroom bickering this week. But that is not to say that there was no news. Judge Perry ruled on the stain evidence. Dave, I'm going to start with you. Is there significance in this ruling?
Well, excuse me, I just took a sip of water. Yeah, I think so, because it's what do you call it, a harbinger of things to come. There's, I think the judge is probably going to lean in this direction on a lot of the motions for Fry, the Fry motion. So I think you're going to see the gas chromatograph evidence in, even though there's no peer reviews, it's never been used in court. I think you're going to see it for the first time because although there's no peer reviews, there's other evidence that corroborates the gas spectrometer or whatever it is found out, what it discovered in that air. So I think everything along that path is going to. There's no reason why you wouldn't allow dogs to bark in the courtroom, and not literally bark, but say, hey, look, we did smell the scent of death in that trunk. Everything. I mean, dogs have been used a lot, and I think the judge is really going to sweep the defense off their feet, and they won't be able to stand again for a while. I think the judge is going to allow all of it in.
Cobra, do you think that Dave's right? That this is the first part of the Fry ruling, and Perry's just going to say, yep, bring it on down.
Yeah, I think so, for the most part. No rhetorical stuff. But pretty much, they'll probably take the highlights off all of it. I believe the major stuff, the stuff that the jury needs to hear or that the judge feels prudent for them to hear is going to definitely come in. And, you know, had it been somebody else arguing the case, it might have been differently. But Bozo has got it screwed up so bad now, so I guess it's going to all come in.
I'm in two minds about a lot of the Fry evidence. A part of me wants to say Perry's going to mostly err on the conservative side. He doesn't want to come out and say that this is good stuff. But he doesn't want to come out and say it's bad stuff, you know, and rule it inadmissible. I think he would rather have it on the table and let the jury decide its value. But, Dave, would you be in agreement with that comment?
Yeah, I think so. Sure. Hang on. I'm trying to answer someone about the virtual tour. The link doesn't work at the Ninja 9 site. Somebody in chat was saying. Now, anyway, let's go over this again.
I got it.
Okay. You did?
Yeah, it opened.
I went to it, and it leads me to nowhere. I was trying to fix it.
But
go ahead. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No. Would you ask me that again, Simon? I'm sorry.
Okay. It seems to me that Perry isn't ruling so much about this evidence is good or this evidence is bad, as in inadmissible.
Oh, no.
You know, he's taking the high road of, I really don't know. I'll just let the jury decide.
Well, that's right. I mean, a judge is more or less like a referee. I mean, I spoke to a judge recently, and he said that by the time this thing goes to trial, people like you, Dave, are going to know more about this case than I do, because I'm not here to really I think what he was trying to say, even though he was basically exaggerating, of course he knows a lot more than I know, but he said that it's really for the jury to hear and decide. So his job at that point was just to allow stuff in or not allow stuff in. He rules on the legalities of things of that nature. But throughout the trial, he's not going to pass judgment like a jury will. He's going to have to take when the jury renders a decision, that's when he comes in, and in the state of Florida, the judge can overrule jury. But I think that as he weighs all this evidence, he's not sitting in judgment of Casey per se, you know, especially now for the hearings. When it goes to trial, it'll be a different thing, but at the moment, this is just the decisions on whether it's legal or not. And I think he's very careful about that. He is conservative. He's a case law kind of a guy. But he still has to rationalize in his head, because with any decision, you're going to have case law working one way or another. You know, it could offer two different sides. And then he's got to decide on his own which way he wants to go, if that makes all that sense.
Oh, it certainly does. Okay, so that was one ruling that came down this week. Do we have any timeline on the rest of the Fry rulings?
Well, he said he was going to come down with a decision on the 21st, and certainly he only came up with one. But he said he's going to rule next week. I think the stations are, the media is all saying Monday. I think he might have said something about Monday. So tomorrow might be the big day. And that allows time for the defense to, or whatever, to file rebuttals or whatever, rebuttal motions.
Yeah, I wonder if he's listening in.
I heard he was eating lunch at Easter lunch at or dinner at the Waffle House.
Right. and let me guess, Jose Baez was picking up the tab.
Yes, he was. Actually, Chaney Mason. Baez doesn't have any money.
Oh, that's right. Okay, let's move on to the next item. This week saw the release of a couple of depositions. I want to start with the Amy Huizenga deposition. Dave, you have read it, I'm sure.
Yes. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you your overall thoughts before we get into the nits and grits of it.
Well, my take on it was it didn't necessarily tell us much that was new, but it filled in some of the cracks, you know. I mean, like where she had how she became how Amy became Casey's friend, and how she sensed early on that there was something about her story that just didn't jive with reality. But like I think every one of them had said subsequent to that was of the crime, that they all kind of shrugged it off. They just didn't want to get into some kind of a confrontation with her. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, sure, okay. Oh, yeah, your father's been to the moon. Okay, yep, your father's an astronaut, sure, okay. And they blew it off. But I think then it kind of fills in some of the details about where she spent her nights when she didn't want to stay home. I think she bounced from friend to friend to friend. But I think that what was sad was that she didn't want to she wanted to prosecute Casey, and she wanted to get it over with. It had nothing to do with Casey and facing the death penalty, but she wanted it behind her. So I think that she's a very methodical type person. Amy wanted everything over and done with so she could put it behind her. And unfortunately, she'll never be able to do that.
What I found revealing in the deposition was the description of her conversation with Cindy, the conversation on route to locate Casey. It seemed curious. I mean, I think her exact words were something along the lines of, it was clear that we both had questions and only the other could answer. Subject of money came up. Did you tie into that at all, Dave?
Well, yeah, I think the most telling thing about Casey was that when her mother was scolding her, it was like Amy said that she was looking at Casey looked like she was a child. You know, she just kind of like closed herself in and folded her arms tightly and didn't want to say a word. But what was it about the money that you're specifically asking about? I just remember that there was nothing really new about this car ride, because I think Amy had said that earlier in her first deposition. So I don't know what you mean by the money.
Oh, okay. I think they discussed the fact that Amy was out money, and both Cindy and Cindy's mother were out money.
Oh yeah, right.
Right, and very much the sole culprit seemed to be Casey Anthony.
Sure. Amy already aware of her money being missing? I don't remember that specific detail of it, but if she wasn't, she found out soon after that. But the thing is, I think that Amy was afraid to really talk too much in the back seat of that car because she didn't want to get mixed into it, you know? It was one of those family fights, and I would have probably done the same thing.
Right. Now, there was an aspect of the deposition that certainly caught my eye, and that was that a calendar had been drawn up, and four people, Amy, Jesse Grund, and two others that escape my memory right now, bought themselves what we would view as a monthly large calendar, and spent some time filling it in. May, June, July. Where was Casey? What was she doing? Were you surprised when you read that Jesse Grund seemed to be the person suggesting that this would be a good idea for them to do?
Was it? No, I think it was a great idea. I wasn't surprised. I mean, Grund, I guess, had been a cop or studied to be one. I think Amy said in the interview that that he was a cop, so he was. But I think that he was probably the most pragmatic person there. Hey, look, somebody's got to take the bull by the horns. Let's try and organize this so we can come to terms with when we're going to be asked by every law enforcement agency in the state of Florida what transpired with us and Casey. We've got to come up with some firm details and dates. I think it was a smart move on Jesse's part. And, how many people do think to do that? I never would have thought to do it.
I, for one, was unaware of.
No, I wasn't. No, yeah, I was too. Not, I didn't know.
Right. I think it's time to bring in the infamous Cobra.
Mm-hmm.
Cobra, were you aware that Jesse was the driving force behind that calendar?
I kind of picked up on that early on that he was, but, it's been kind of swept under the rug there, and, for obvious reasons. I mean, basically, I think they saw the tide turning, and there was a lot of questions being asked, what was she doing, what's going on. So I think it was more or less trying to set up a timeline to figure out where was she, where was everybody else, and in respect to this, and what exactly happened. That was my belief on it.
Mm-hmm. Only if they're good.
Sorry.
No, carry on.
No, that's pretty much, I think it was, you have to be more direct with it, but I think at that point, if somebody smelled something was going on, so it's trying to get a timeline.
Okay. I know that you're probably closest to the Grund family. Have you spoken with them at all recently?
Yes, I have, matter of fact, yes. I spoke to Richard yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you would like to share with us?
Just a couple different things that we went over, some of the facts of the case. Number one, just bringing to attention in case anybody missed it, the 911 call when Susan said that Cindy said that she had not seen her daughter in over a month. You recall that?
Yes.
Well, that's true. She had not seen her daughter for over a month. However, we have the phone records, and during that month period, they talked every day, volumes, several times a day, for long, extended periods of time. So when you look at that, she might not have been in contact seeing her, you know, as far as see her, but she was definitely in contact with her every single day for long periods of time, which leads a reasonable person to believe that Cindy Anthony was in on this all along, and maybe, opinion-wise here, part of the cover-up. And that leads me back to what I was saying earlier, that Casey is liable to throw herself on the sword and say, listen, I wanted to come forward earlier and tell you guys that it was an accidental death, but my mom wouldn't let me. And she tried choking me the night before all this happened, and I was scared. And she was busy trying to come up with some other angles, such as when she was at jail, she was asking Casey at jail, Cindy was, wasn't Lee babysitting the baby? No, Mom. Lee hasn't babysit the baby since the baby was a baby, you know. So it appears that Cindy knows a lot more than she's saying, and it appears, just appears, by the phone records, by what she was saying and everything else, when one sits down and compares all that out, that she's in part of this, all this big cover-up, and knew all along exactly what was going on. And I think sooner or later, Casey's going to throw Mommy under the bus. And when I went back through and looked at it, where she allegedly said, I love you, Mom, I still maintain she said, I loathe you, Mom, that she hates her. I mean, that is a brutal hatred that goes on there. So anything that you're seeing, all the fake stuff, then we come up on the discussion, why hadn't they been to jail to see her daughter? And the answer was, because they didn't want to run into the press and everything else. And all they had to do was not talk about this case. However, they can't. There's nothing for them to talk about. There's nothing that draws this family together except this case. They have no prior, nothing, absolutely nothing. It's just a big ball of hatred. So went through it all. We discussed the 48-hour thing. Some of it, I'll tell you, not very happy with 48 hours. In fact, the affiliate CBS, I believe it is trying to distance himself now from the 48-hour episode. That was all filmed and shot back in 2009. And it was designed to be a look what they're doing to the Grun family. And somehow or another, they switched it, and it's a pro-Anthony statement now, which is really not any part stretch of the imagination to being truthful. And they kind of misled my client majorly, and it has had some major devastating outcomes to it. And can't go much further than that because that's part of our civil case. But the fact of the matter is 48 hours, sometimes you got to be careful what you watch on TV, but they flat out lied to my client, and they misrepresented my client, and they misrepresented everything they've been showing the American public since then, and they just aired another one that had devastating effects, and we're requesting they air no more, and if they continue, then I guess that's the next thing you'll be reading about, that we'll have to go after the editor-in-chief or whoever is responsible for these shenanigans that they're pulling, because that was not the auspices of how this was supposed to go down. It was total trickery. I mean, trickery at its best form, we can prove that. So there was a lot of things that came out in the whole discussion. Like I said, some I can share, some are privileged, and they'll come out at a later date. But, yeah, it's quite interesting, Simon, that the best laid plans of mice and men and the evil that one perceives and, you know, the evils that come about. We also managed to track down some of these trolls. We kept seeing these trolls pop up. So I went code silent, and I let it alone. Then we did like we did in the famous case of the cop cover-up. We sent some undercover people to go inside that whole world of blogger news and your little buddies over in Tennessee, your ex-friends over there, I guess, and all the head people. And we found, you know, the enemy of thy enemy is my friend. Well, that's what we found. We found the enemy of the enemy and made him our friend and sent him in. And come to find out that a very known, maybe two-time award-winning something or another, and another negative truth or whatever it's called, and a famous or not so famous or infamous attorney, and some of the attorney's helpers, those are all the core at the bottom of all this bastardly dealings on the Internet, all the double talk and twistedness going back and forth and all the soothsaying and everything else that's going on out there. We've tracked it down. We know the head person. We know the head person's right-hand man, and we know several other ones. So we're not at liberty to bring them all out, but if you read between the lines, they're not too far removed from prior cases we've spoken about. And it's crazy when the press or members of the press or so-called press involve themselves in the blogosphere out there to create news for themselves, to promote their own websites and their own news hunger or thirst or whatever. It's ridiculous, crazy. But they hid behind all these ghost names and all these different things and fake IP addresses. Now there's a new thing out there we discovered. It's, you know, you can fake your IP address. However, you know, if you work hard enough, there is a system that uncovers all that. So all these fake emails, fake IPs have been going out, all the ghost searching, the spoofing, everything else. We tracked it all right back to some very formidable close friends of ours. And
I don't think we want to name names at this
stage. No, we won't need to name names, but we all know who they are.
I'll tell you what. Are now. Well, let's go out on a real limb here, and take a caller. We have someone coming in from the 302 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hey, Simon. I joined you as you were talking about Amy's deposition, but there's so much more interesting that's happened since then. Just in terms of the last discussion on the 48 hours, it's obviously disgraceful. We challenged, you know, folks whom I discussed the case with, and we discussed the matters online. We're not the kind of bloggers that were just discussed, but I'm sure that the commentator is aware that Boedeker has said that CBS lied to him because he was sort of led down the garden path about promoting this, and he did a 180 turn. So you'll want to look into that aspect. But the other thing about Amy's deposition that we found interesting was how Baez tried to get her to say she was all, you know, sort of coerced into prosecuting on the theft. And she said that she only did it sort of for personal accountability reasons. And when pressed, you know, Baez was trying to say, well, they told you that it would be a factor in the death penalty. And she said, no. Law enforcement never told me that, but my own lawyer did. But I decided to go forward anyway. So we all think it's interesting that Amy has more, you know, integrity than Cindy. And if Cindy had a call for accountability in Casey's early life, maybe the first time she's being called to be accountable wouldn't involve the death penalty.
It's curious, your phraseology. I read the Huizinga deposition. In fact, I reread it a little bit earlier today. It seemed to me that the questions weren't quite the way you put it. I, you know, it's easy to misconstrue. I don't recall them actually mentioning the death penalty.
Page 46.
It was
page 46,
pardon?
Simon. Go to page 46.
Okay. Someone that's done their homework.
I've done my homework.
I rather viewed it as, why did you push charges? Her reply seemed to revolve around, well, the bank was willing to reimburse me, but I wasn't sure they would reimburse me if I didn't push charges.
I must say that I thought there was a thin thread of that, but I honestly believe if you go back and look at the pages I'm suggesting, Baez leads her through a series of questions about, you know, you were her friend, blah, 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 why would you do this? And she was very seemingly, now we don't have the audio on it, I only read the transcript, she seemed to be gently responding, but straightforwardly saying, well, I thought it was the right thing to do. Yes, I couldn't believe that the person I had trusted had done this to me, and I decided to go forward and take the steps I thought were what you were supposed to do under the circumstances. And buyers kept asking about, well, did law enforcement encourage you? Did law enforcement do this? Did law enforcement do that? And I believe, unless you have a pagination different than the one I saw, because I have a very vivid memory of this, at the top of page 46.
I got it open right here.
Go to 46. The top. Well, as I said, I can't swear because, you know, pagination, depending on which sort of PDF you might be looking at, could shift. But he says, were you aware that a conviction on this would be a factor in sort of, you know, and I don't remember the exact words, but sort of, it's one of those sort of, what do they call it, aggravating factors. He didn't use that terminology for the death penalty. And I guess at some point she says, yes, I was aware of it. He goes, did law enforcement tell you that? Again, trying to play the theme that law enforcement was just trying to prod everybody to get Casey no matter what, even though it was unfair. And she says, no, law enforcement did not tell me that. My private attorney told me that. And sort of notwithstanding that, factoring that in, I decided to move forward because I thought that was the right thing to do. Later, I believe, if I have my chronology right in the depo, she says, and yes, you know, maybe I also thought that this was also, you know, and I think all of us sort of a certain era were trained to do that. Like, if you think you have a claim and you don't have a police report, maybe no one's going to believe you. But after all of the conversation about Baez trying to convince her or create a scenario whereby she only moved forward because she was, again, another agent of the state, everybody's an agent of the state, in the massive conspiracy against poor Casey. So she finally, you know, he took her through that. He was trying to lead her down that trail, and she just wasn't going. She said, I made this determination because I thought it was the right thing to do.
Dave,
yeah.
Your
yeah,
comment.
Yeah, she did. She's right. And then at the end, she said, basically at the end of that, because they took a recess right after that, not that I'm saying, you know, she said it was a very minor offense, but justice is still justice. But then Casey had apologized, and she said it was nice. But still, you know, it was
and,
justice.
You know, and
she
said
for.
In the deposition, I heard, and it wasn't directly to Amy, it was through Cindy, right? But she said, I heard, and she was, I thought, very gracious. She said, I understand she, because Bias is saying, well, didn't she apologize? Weren't you aware she apologized? And Amy says, I was aware of that. And she goes so far as to say, I think it was sincere. She doesn't even say, I think it was meaningless and it was a strategy move. She goes, I think it was sincere, but I still did what I thought I should do.
Which I think is normal. I mean, I think probably because Amy wanted to trust her. They had been friends, and you don't expect a friend to do something like this. So when it happens, you know, it's kind of like that personal affront. It's like, wow, I can't believe you treated me like garbage.
Right.
You know, so I think that might have been part of it. Not a vendetta, not a payback, but it's like you get everything that you deserve for what you do to people, including
me. If I may suggest, Amy, I thought, had all of the constellation of motivations that a normal sort of right-thinking person has. Yes, I was angry, and I said, hey, you know, I'm calling you out on your stuff. She also said, gee, I was raised that you're supposed to, you know, if you have a problem, you report it to the authorities, you know. And she was just, a lot of us who have looked at this have come away with the impression that Amy is a very decent, what we used to think of as normal person until we bumped into the likes of Casey.
She had every right to press charges.
Of course she did.
Yeah, and nobody in that Anthony family should be upset about it either. I mean, Casey did what she did. And regardless of how much the Anthony family defends her for this and that, they can't take anything out on Amy because that, you know, it was...
That's right.
Casey brought it on herself. That's all there
right.
is to it.
Well,
okay.
And as I said, our feeling is that the Anthony family not only should not castigate Amy, but that if they had done one millionth of what Amy did in the moment, being a somewhat recently acquired friend, not owing Casey what the family, you know, owed her in terms of how you bring a child up, Casey might well not have been where she is today.
Exactly.
Okay. I want to move on a little bit. Jen, I understand you have a question for Mr. C.
Yeah, from the chat room. I got to find it again now, though. I wasn't expecting it right now. Okay, wait just a second. One thing about something you said, Cobra, last week, I know it's from then, They want to know why you can say that you think Casey's going to walk when she still has these other charges against her for, I forgot exactly what the question was, but it was for lying.
Lying to the authorities.
Right.
COVID's going to say time served.
Well, but the maximum sentence for each one of those charges is 5 years, and the judge can give her up to 5 years for each one of them.
I'll be quiet.
So, is Cobra there?
And you know,
I finally get to ask it, and he's gone.
No, Cobra's there. He's just got his head buried in a bucket of sand.
But you know what? Jan, when you said that, you know, it could have been 5 years for each charge or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was all under Judge Strickland. And you know,
no,
and I'm sorry, but I still have a thorn up my rear end.
Yeah, that's just the statute and sentencing. But, you know, reality, we all know about reality of sentencing. Just look at the Lindsay Lohan case. There's a discount.
Right.
There's a huge discount.
Yeah, but the thing with you know, I think that was really stupid of the defense to say that Judge Strickland was not fair, you know, because look what he did with Casey on that fraud case. I mean, he dropped over half the charges, you know.
You know, smart
and,
people
gave her time served.
Smart people in that arena said the day it happened, he would come to rue the day that he thought that was a victory.
Well, you know, it's just sad, but that's what this case has been around. You know, all along it's been kind of like a mess. Like the defense doesn't know what they're doing. Gee, yeah.
And
okay,
they're still trying to pull a rabbit out of the hat to bring in an Easter reference.
No. We'll try it one more time. Earth the Cobra.
Cobra's there. I've been listening. What was the question? No. I was listening,
but
I was...
Here's the bad news, Cobra. We remember, so you're still going to have to answer it.
Lord Jesus.
What?
I wanted to tell you one thing. You know, we were talking about Bozo there a while ago, and that's what I kept wanting to jump in there and tell you. You know, I found out that the Telemundo people want him. He's got to go all the way to trial. He can't do no plea deal or nothing. I almost got a sneak peek at the whole backside of this thing, but somebody came in the room too fast, and I had to jump out the window like usual. But... he has to go all the way to trial.
America to Telemundo, they can have him.
Well, the thing of it is he has to go all the way to trial. And once they get to trial and all of a sudden the jury's picked and seated and the trial begins, then his deal is done. Because I don't know, Simon, if you looked up the information that we were popping off last night, I do not believe that he can even ask the question once the trial undertakes because he's not death penalty certified. I think it all goes over to Mason.
No, he can. That's just an umbrella over the whole case.
They've
got their umbrella.
I don't know if he can question anybody. I don't know if
he can
make any questions. Are you sure?
Sure he can.
Are you sure?
I believe he can.
He's the trial lawyer. They've got the umbrella.
Yeah,
they've got somebody overseeing the whole thing.
Okay,
that's right.
Y'all are thinking, but I'm asking.
No, I'm just,
under
I know
Florida
that.
Rules. Under bar rules. Are you sure? All right.
Yes.
All right. Well,
Cobra, they could not have let him manage the whole disclosure process if they didn't have the umbrella of the death qualified lawyer. They've got that, so everything now proceeds because he supposedly has, you know, uncle looking
covering.
Over everything. Yep.
Right, covering. Well,
yep.
I'm under a different school of thought until I see him actually start asking questions, then I'll say, shit, okay, I was wrong. But
have you watched the hearings, Cobra?
Yeah, but see, that's not the same as going before the jury and, you know, like Dave said earlier.
If it helps you from a legal process standpoint, it's all the same thing.
Well, the way I understand it is, just like Dave said earlier, the judge is just an umpire, referee at best, all the way through this thing. So asking questions back and forth and all that, but I think when it comes to I don't know. I was told one way, so, you know, hey, make no skin off me.
I'll offer you a fairly educated view on this. That question's off the table. They got Mason in there, and so now the whole thing proceeds however it proceeds.
I see. All right. Well, what was the question?
Okay.
Before you bury your head
in the bucket of sand again,
you said Casey would walk.
Jan asked the question.
Somebody in the chat room wanted to know last week when you said that you think that Casey's going to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
How can you say that with all the other charges that they have against her?
Here's the thing. I think they're only trying to get rid of the first-degree murder charge, but the rest of it may stick. However, it all depends on if anybody studies the phone calls back and forth and the things coming in and out from Cindy and having her as part of the cover-up. I'm not so sure this little girl did what she said after finding out all the other crap that goes along with it. You only need one member on that jury to say, I ain't buying this, and then hold out, and either you get a mistrial or you get a continue or something that goes on. But I don't believe first go-round, I don't think it's going to come into it. It's either going to come into a hung jury type of situation where we got to go at it again, or they'll just come back and say, not guilty because of this. But she is guilty of something, absolutely. But the thing of it is, there's so much other trash out there that I couldn't sit there reasonably and say, yeah, go ahead and stick the needle in her arm, she's guilty, because I think there's a couple people that need to sit in the chair first, and then we'll get around to her. And plus, I threw it out there, too, to say, hey, we can't all agree, otherwise we may as well just hang up the damn phone.
I'll give you my two cents on that one. Hung jury, that will mean that the jury has been taken out back and hung by just about everyone in the U.S.
Yeah, well, look what you got going on there. You got a dysfunctional family. You got a crazy story. You got all these depots. You got a bozo clown running the show. You got a hanging judge. I mean, shit. This is kind of like fit for the movies.
Well, it sounds like you're coming over to the light.
Hey, listen, here's what I used to believe.
Come on, we want you. Come on, you're welcome. Come on, you know the truth.
Here's what I used to believe. I mean, hell, I believe it. I mean, she's dirty as hell. Somebody did something ugly. But let me tell you what I used to believe. I used to believe I'm a bondsman. And as a bondsman, I can bond anybody out of jail, any price, any time, anywhere, any state, any of that business. But I've chosen not to do that. I'd rather hunt. The same license to hunt or to, you know, collect the body and take them back to jail. And I used to believe the judicial system worked. I always did. Now I believe justice is what you can afford, period and end of story. Ever since I ran into a snag, I'm thinking, there is no fairness in the judicial system whatsoever. And if they could pull them shenanigans they pulled on me and got away with it, temporarily, of course, you know, for about 3 years now, then I believe they could pull any kind of shit and shenanigans, especially if a camera was sitting right there watching them. They could still get away with some kind of shenanigans. So I think it's depending on how they wake up in the morning and what they decide they're going to do, and they just go do it. Justice is what you can afford. It ain't about being fair no more.
That's a valid point.
I don't think it ever was.
We're down to like the last 47 minutes of the program, and we haven't even touched on lots of the topics. So I want to switch topics, and I want to bring up the Tony Lazzaro Depot. Dave, what's your overview on that one?
Well, excuse me, you there? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, I pushed the button. I didn't know what I... it's pretty much the same thing with... it's not the same type of an interview with Amy, but to me, the results are not that earth-shattering. I mean, I think that... we knew that he never talked to her again after she was first arrested. I think he just kind of like didn't want anything to do with her. But I think also that what I noticed more with him than I did with Amy was that he had a little bit more trouble recollecting details. So, and I'm not saying that he's not as sharp as Amy. Amy definitely seems to be on the ball. But I wonder, it made me wonder, if the defense waited to do these depositions,
hoping that the players wouldn't remember a lot of things. So it might hurt their testimony at trial, if that makes sense to anyone. That was the first thing I thought of, but I didn't know, you know, that that would be the right answer or not.
Do people here remember the Watergate hearing?
Sense. In fact, I read the Lazzaro Depot, and I was taken back in time. I was going, oh, my God, they've cloned Cato Kalin.
Or Watergate, Simon. This is the Watergate hearings. I have no present recollection.
Well, I don't think that he's going to have a problem testifying against Casey. I think it was just that, you know, after all this time, he doesn't live in the same place anymore.
Right.
He's probably not, you know, hanging around with that circle of friends. There are a lot of things that that he just basically doesn't remember.
I think he also, he went home to New York. He was already disengaging with her. That was part of the crisis. She thought he was her new meal ticket. He was headed to New York to talk to his father. It was unclear whether he was even returning to Florida, because Daddy apparently needed to have a talk with him. And I think Daddy has stepped in. Daddy got him a lawyer to get him through the depot and said, you don't want to have anything to do with this. You know, the less involved, you have no reason to be energized to participate. And I think that plus maybe a million other things means Tony has no present recollection of what the hell happened. Of course, except for his confrontation with Cindy, and who can forget a confrontation with Cindy?
Yes. That is a good point. I mean, Cindy does seem to leave a mark. But I'm gonna throw out another question, open question to the panel. There's been a lot of rumors floating around that Baez is going to try to pin the entire deal on George Anthony. Now, if you read the Lazzaro and Huizinga depots, George comes out reasonably unscathed. The evil one is Cindy Anthony. How are they going to pin it on George?
Well, you know what I think? I wrote something on that on the just the other day. And on Thursday. And I said that what they can do is George can come out when he said he's going to make some kind of a statement that's going to explain away the 30, 31 days, whatever you want to base it on. But, you know, that it'll all be clear and that problem will go away. I think they're going to say that Casey was afraid of her father and possibly her mother. That she was afraid if they ever found out what happened to Kaylee, they would beat her to death. And
that's
why she didn't say
it. You're not far from it there, Dave, and it's not that at all, but you're not far from it. You ever heard the story, I'm rubber, you're glue, it bounces off me, sticks to you? I think Baez has done such a good job of throwing out something to see if it'll stick, and if it doesn't stick, then he resorts to second best. The story has always been going towards Cindy all along. They just mentioned George. So George, whoa. George would have went bananas if he knew that Cindy was in communication with her daughter for that whole 30-day period, for long extended periods of time. And it is believed by some, and I'm not so sure that I'm away from the belief, that Cindy knew. Cindy's involved. Cindy knew. And Cindy, and of course, their relationship was kind of sideways any damn way going into this thing, and by the comments and everything made by the investigators and everybody else that was around close to the case and her shenanigans and different things, I think that she knew all along. And I think what they're trying to do is smoke George and go, listen, she's the one, go talk to her. Basically, they probably already know how to go about or who all is involved, but knowing it and having proof to prove it is two different things. So attack somebody, and in this case, George. And then with his hot-ass temper, he'll rear up and throw it right back to Cindy, and then, boom, there you go. And then, i.e., Casey gets a walk, and that's where I've been going with this thing since day one, that's how it's going to flip back around. He said he had something that he could reasonably explain this all away very quickly and, you know, da-da-da, and everybody says, well, why hasn't he? He hasn't had the floor to do such. You know, he hasn't had the door open for the opportunity to step through yet.
Well, a couple of things. One is, that is a defense lawyer's, you know, in the toolkit. They all say, I've got the magic story, I just can't tell you yet. So, I mean, Garagos did that with Peterson, and he came up saying nothing at trial. So that's sort of, they put that out into the atmosphere, hoping it will somehow take hold. What's interesting about the timeline of Baez's comments about, you know, I'll stand up in the first minute, I'm going to tell you, and you're all going to say, Casey's the mother of the year, I'm so sorry I ever thought otherwise, is that was before his whole mental health expert strategy got blown out of the water. So he, I believe, thought that he could get up in his opening statement and say, we're going to show you how this poor woman was so, you know, tortured and abused and twisted in her own sense that she couldn't trust anybody, that she couldn't tell the truth, and we're going to show you how all of her actions have been misunderstood. Now, that was all, I believe, based on their strategy to bring up the post-traumatic stress disorder and their experts who was going to give hypothetical testimony and all of that. If you notice, one of the things the district attorney, the state attorney did immediately was file a motion saying there can be no mention of that until any relevant evidence is produced at trial. What does that mean? It means that Bozo can't stand up in the opening statement and create this sort of cloud that he hoped to get the jury to see all the evidence through about how she was a tortured soul. And frankly, since he was silly enough to make that promise, and he now finds out that a very disciplined judge has said, you know, there's absolutely no basis for introducing that evidence, much less probably making reference to it in the opening statement, what on earth is he going to say? And I don't think he has anything to say. I think that is, again, going to be one of those sort of empty promises that defense lawyers make, and he's not going to be able to deliver on anything.
Speaking of nothing to say, I got a news flash for y'all. When Cindy was down there at the jailhouse, when she did go visit her daughter, and she said, wasn't that the time that Lee was watching the kid? No, Mom. Lee hasn't watched the kid since the kid was a baby. And then all of a sudden it came out after our investigation with Hoover, and come to find out that they were trying to swap and obtain DNA. And then we threw Lee right out there because Lee's the one made the trip to Atlanta to acquire the DNA from Jesse Grund. What have you not seen lately for the last how many weeks and months? Where the hell's Lee? Where is
Where's
he?
Where's Lee? Where's the Hoover Depot?
Where's Lee? Where's Lee?
Pulling up
somebody
the stock,
somebody
cars.
Better get a dog out there and find him. He gone.
Okay, folks. We're going to take another wild stab at the great unknown. We have a caller coming in from the 952 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, I'm MJ, and I just wanted to comment about them using George. I don't think that the jury's going to buy that. First of all, George didn't have access really to that car, if you follow the timeline and everything. And I just don't think that that's going to fly. So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Dave, do you think that they have any chance at all of pinning it on George?
No, not really. I mean, you know, look, I've got a strong opinion about this defense because of what was done last April. So, you know, I'm certainly convinced that I had nothing to do with that, really. The defense used me. I was a pawn to them. And I think what it clearly showed was that this defense will basically toss anybody under the bus to get their client off. Well, I know that that's part of the way a defense works. They're out to clear their client, but the thing is, this one seems to be they never look for anybody who did it. They're looking for ways otherwise. You know, like let's try and pin everything on someone else. Like now in this case, I'm almost convinced that Baez and the defense they're going to go after whoever they can. And now it's George. I think they're still going to go after him no matter what. But I don't think it's going to work. I do not think it's going to work because the defense is going to see right through it. I mean the jury.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, there is something I'd like to add. I don't remember which one of the depots that I had read, but one of them had something about with Casey talking about the smell in her car and saying that she thinks her dad might have run over a squirrel or hit a squirrel with
it. That's in the Amy depot.
Right, so that could be where they're going to try to say, well, George was driving the car.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, she's a psycho. She is a pathological liar. And
oh, I know
ever,
that. I'm not saying
I believe it.
I'm just saying that could have been where they're going to, I mean, that could be one of the points where they might be trying to go that way.
I agree with you.
Amy's saying that this is before anything was going on that Casey told her that. So, I mean, this could have all been set up.
I think that's what I'm saying. Casey's mind, it was. She already knew. She still needed the car. There was the god-awful smell. She was sort of like all, you know, pathological liars do and psychopaths. They're starting to sort of sprinkle around their justifications and their diversions. And she's yakking with Amy, and she says, you know, there's this awful smell in the car. I might have run over a squirrel. Oh, maybe I didn't run over the squirrel. Maybe my father ran over the squirrel.
Right, when he had the car.
Yeah.
So that's where they're going to try to put it on that he did have access to the car.
And if you follow the way Casey tells her stories, it's like she has this, like, rambling, you know, lying program going. And the problem is that, and this is where I think it gets interesting as to what, if anything, we hear at trial, you know, she was fluid. You know, that's like she took the law enforcement down the hall until she hit a wall, and then she had to finally say, oh, I guess I'm at the wall. She was, you know, sprinkling stories about the nanny, and at one point it was, you know, Zanny at Sawgrass, and then later it was Zanny and her sister at Blanchard Park. It's like
she hadn't
settled on anything. So she's had 3 years to sit in jail trying to refine her story and come up with a cohesive, you know, kind of excuse. The problem is that all of these lies, you know, show that none of what she says is credible. But I completely agree with you. In Amy's deposition, there are the seeds of, you know, some things that they'll try to knit together for, you know, we're not saying George did it, but, you know, it could have been. And if it could have been anybody else, reasonable doubt.
Would y'all agree that Casey's a pretty street savvy, for the most part, seasoned liar? And one thing that I notice about her in certain stories ring out really, really good. Other stories don't ring out so well, just like we just like the caller there made mention of, going there, Zanny the Nanny. I don't believe that all these stories are originated by Casey. I think they're originated by Cindy. And it seems to me that the person lying is telling a story that someone else told them and tell them this, and didn't you have a nanny? Didn't Lee go down there? Wasn't Lee babysitting the child then? Putting out all the smoke and mirrors, and she's trying to grab it up and try to make it make sense, and she can't. And then she backs herself in the corner because she's not the originator of the lie. So it leads me to believe Cindy's involved in this all the way down the pike and may have been making suggestions to Casey about where were you and how'd you do this and weren't you over there at that job and everything. She knew she didn't have a nanny. She knew all this stuff. And then she comes out later and tries to pretend that she didn't know any of this stuff. And, yeah, I always thought so. Well, crap. Isn't there a check that was written to the lady? Didn't they ever come by to see one another? Did anybody else pick up the kid? She couldn't have been late one day. No, I think that Casey is not the originator
of some of these wild, twisted tales. I think Cindy is, and I think that, you know, same if you ever try to get somebody else to lie for you or give somebody else an idea to lie, they don't have all the frickin' pieces because you're the originator of it, not Casey. So I think that throwing darts at George is going to piss George off to where George is going to give up some ghosts, and then those ghosts are going to turn around and burn Cindy, and
well,
which
that,
will probably...
That's interesting. But may I ask you a question? I absolutely think Cindy is not only capable of obstruction of justice, I think she's committed it. But I do think there was a point in time when that started. Is your theory about Cindy, I mean, does it go back to before the 911 calls?
Yeah, my theory sticks all the way from day one at the 911 calls because she was talking to Casey every single day for long periods of time over that 30-day period. And a couple of things, and I wish Peter Hyatt was out there listening and he could comment on the thing because he does the truth analysis, but certain things that we know when people are talking, they volunteer information. You're not really looking
right.
for that particular information,
right.
but they volunteered it. And she volunteered certain pieces
of information. It leaks out.
It didn't sound
why
to me.
Why do you think she called 911 then? If Cindy was in on it, why did she call 911?
Because after a period of time, somebody's going to, they figured they had enough shit together, so, you know, we're going to have to make a notice. Because probably George is flipping out. He's probably asking questions. So I don't know what drove her to call 911, but she made three or four interesting statements. I haven't seen my daughter in a month. I knew this, and I don't know where she's at. Now I've seen the car, and it smells like a damn dead body in there. If you really listen to that on its face value, and you and I are just sitting down talking about it, and this is the 911 tape, it makes absolutely no damn sense. Usually you call 911, listen, I'd like to report a missing person. What? I don't know. How do I go about doing that? It's not done in a 911 call. It's done with a trip down to the sheriff's office, and you fill out a form, and I got a missing person. You don't call 911 and tell them all this crap. That's the first...
First of all, they have a history with 911. That was not the first time. The cops have been out to that house before.
Have you heard any other 911 tapes? They're a whole lot different. The other 911 calls that they've had, certain things. Yes, they've had a lot of 911 experiences. So-and-so is getting the hell beat out of them. We heard strange noise. But nothing as strange as that. Nobody who has a missing person come up missing. Hey, yeah, I haven't seen my daughter in 30 days. Or she didn't bother saying, you know, I've talked to her every single day for hours on end, but I haven't seen her. You know, people talk to people every single day on the phone and haven't seen them for 30 days.
Yeah, so, but Cindy strangled Casey on, what, the 15th.
Casey took off.
I think Cindy was afraid that Casey was going to call the cops on her. And I think she knew she was going to be in a serious timeout. And she was willing to take the text messages and the, you know, sort of obstruct, you know, resistance to coming back. I think she knew she was going to be in for a good long punishment period from Casey. My two cents is I think Cindy was legit up onto the 911 calls, and I've watched her in the videotaped interviews with law enforcement, and when they start asking her about the credit card receipts, she flips. She goes, uh-oh, time to circle the wagons. And I think that's when she turned to the dark side.
Well, I think she's been, according to my research on it and people very close, she's been on the dark side for a very long time.
Well, I would love to hear that because I'm no apologist for Cindy.
No.
I think she's been on the dark side ever since she realized she opened her big mouth.
Jen, I know you have a question.
Yes, I do. Another one for Cobra from the chat room. They want to know, where did you hear anything about Lee babysitting?
This was on one of the jailhouse interviews that was released to the public where Cindy Anthony was talking to Casey behind bars early on, and she had asked the question, and I'm paraphrasing it, of course, but the gist of the whole deal was, is it sounded like Cindy Anthony was trying to put food for thought out there, information for Casey to grab a hold of, and she said, wasn't Lee babysitting the Haley then? Kaylee, wasn't Lee doing that? No, Mom, Lee hasn't babysitted Kaylee since she was a baby. So there was something being thrown out there at that point. We only have a snippet of it because the rest of that tape
Of course, you know, in some of the tapes, incidentally, some of the tapes that we're getting are not the full rendition from the time they walk in, hey, how you doing, to the, all the way through to the other side. There's pieces missing. They've been, like, edited or something. Something is amiss there someplace. But
the law is a conspiracy.
Pardon me? Yeah, some kind of conspiracy. Well, it's a conspiracy between all the shit. But the thing is, the thing that really goes out there is Casey, Cindy is in this up to her eyebrows. And, you know, Simon sent out something the other day. We were supposed to tear apart this Lazaro report about, you know, people lying under oath and saying things that aren't quite true and spinning a spin when they know it's not true. And it's kind of like, perjury is not per the jury or something coming back. Perjury is lying, and some of them have been lying, and she lied about the Fab and the Tide and the
hairbrush.
The hairbrush she lied about. She lied about the washing of the clothes, the fabric softener in the car.
She's dirty. I guess people can disagree about where they think she became dirty.
Oh.
Well, listen, I believe she became dirty before the child was conceived.
Okay. All right.
They got another one.
Yep. Jen is the king of questions.
Okay, one more. This is either for Cobra or Dave. I'll get it right in a minute. All right, they want to know what you think the prosecutors meant by Lee knows what he did.
Well, Lee was involved in this all along, from the cover-up, the help cover-up, whether it was instruction by Cindy Anthony or it was just Lee doing the thing. Lee gave up his whole hand when they did the mock ceremony, and Lee got the loudspeaker, and he was up there, and he spoke from there back to jailhouse to Casey at the funeral, the mock funeral, and he says, I will keep my promise. I won't forget. Da, 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 all that bullshit. There was some secret code going out to her, like, keep your mouth shut, honey. I got you. Just relax, you know, everything's going to be all right. There was some very secretive code being exchanged there, and we have an idea exactly what it was, but again, that's part of the thing we're kind of holding back on. But just, I'm allowed to tell you this, you're stupid if you believe that there was nothing being transmitted across the microphone from that funeral, that mock funeral that they had, back
everybody
to the jail.
That was a
May I ask a follow-up question? Does whatever you are working on or know, does it relate also to the jailhouse comment where he says, is this like the last time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it all,
okay.
All goes
to hand. I want to get Dave's comments on this particular aspect.
Oh.
Dave, just tell you, Dave, be very careful. They might not let you back in the courtroom up there if you go sideways on it, because there was some not a ruling put out, but a very stiff, we don't want to go that direction right now.
I'm not afraid of anything like that. The only thing I you know, Lee made a pact with the prosecution, okay? He agreed to say whatever he needed to say, to spill the beans, to tell the truth, or else he could be prosecuted. So he had knowledge of something that was rather probably illegal, nefarious, whatever. I don't know what it was, but, you know, there is that speculation that he tried to clean off Casey's laptop over at...
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's really true or not. I didn't get that when the police, like Melich, when they testified on the stand at the hearings. They didn't even allude to anything like that. And then Lee, I think, took the stand. There was nothing, no mention of anything illegal done at Lazar's apartment. So I don't know. I mean, it never led to anything else. That was what people were speculating, but I don't know for sure. I don't think any of us know for sure. And like I said, there's nothing at those hearings that we recently had that pointed in that direction. So I don't have any idea what it might be.
Dave, I have to share this with you. I was talking with a very good friend of mine earlier today. He's a trial lawyer, albeit in California rather than Florida. And I didn't get into specifics. You know, he charges something like $500 an hour for consulting fees. But, you know, I talked in general terms. And, he said, you know what? Depos in a criminal case, they're always a mixed bag. They're always double-edged sword. It's best not to have them. It's much better to bring on a witness that, you know, has been well-trained. And you can lead them by the nose, and I am paraphrasing, and introduce a subject that has the wow factor. Do you think there's a wow factor that the prosecution has?
Well, I think so, but your friend in California is right, probably, you know. But the thing is, I think that when George, Cindy, and Lee take the stand, there's going to be a lot of pressure from the prosecution. Well, do you recall when you said this in your deposition on such and such a date? And because I think the family's going to be reluctant to testify against their daughter or sister, you know. And I think that they're not going to be more hostile than anything else. But I think in that case, the depositions are going to come into play because of they're going to need that testimony from the depositions, or it won't work, you know, any other way. So
as Linda did with Cindy recently,
right? And you know, that's absolutely right. And I think that you have other witnesses that are going to be prompted to say, you know, and coached. That's a big part of a trial. You coach your witnesses,
you tell them what to wear,
you know, everything. But I think the most important thing is what impresses the jury more than putting on a show for the court.
Right, and the other thing that my friend pointed out was that you don't tend to use an entire depo, you know, in
right.
The trial.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you cherry pick the pieces that you want, and that kind of brings up a question. Why was Cheney Mason so pissy during the depo with Lazaro?
You know, that's a good question. I have no idea what happened there. It didn't seem to me like the line of questioning or the answers at that time was anything bothersome. I wonder whether he got mad at Baez the way he questioned. I don't know.
If you look at that depo, there's some possibility that they were just having, technology problems with the transmission, and he was just, you know, he's got the attention span of a gnat, so he may have just gotten grumpy. But, I mean, really, it doesn't take much to set him off, so sort of trying to explain it is kind of like trying to explain why Casey lies.
Hey, Simon, I'll give you a little something food for thought, and it's kind of like not off the beaten track, just a little bit. You know, sometimes you got to go to the beginning to find the end. First of all, have you ever sat and really thought how in the hell of all these miles and miles and miles of real estate around this suburban drive could it only be 15 houses away, less than 1,000 yards from the house, that they actually find the body? And could you actually go deeper into that to find out that who in the hell come up with a story that that's where she used to bury her hamsters and her birds and shit when they die? Number three, who down at the jailhouse leaked this information to Hoover? Was it Hoover's girlfriend who worked there at the jail? And how did they get that information from Crump, from Crump over to Hoover and to Dominic Casey, and was that food chain through Lee? And then what did they do? Go there in August after they got this information, decided the body had not decomposed enough, that there was still too much DNA, but we need to get Jesse's DNA and put it on this bag and do it kind of quick. And then at the last halo, how you doing, come right back out there again with Crump in, what, December, many months later, and go, all right, the skull rolled out the bag, so I think it's time to call law enforcement on out here. I'm not going to call 911 myself. I'm going to get on my job radio and call it in this way and kind of take some heat off of me, and I'm going to sell them a picture of a rattlesnake for $20,000, and everything's going to be good. Now, somewhere in all that crap that I just told you tells you a bigger picture to the whole story. And you got to sit and wonder, how in the hell does all this jigsaw puzzle go together? And who is the main conduit? Could it be Lee, or could it be the investigators? Or could it be Lee? Or was it Lee?
Was it Lee?
Where is Lee?
Good question. Ain't nobody seen Lee, and nobody knows where Lee's at. Lee has disappeared. Lee's left. That's the new one today. Lee left.
Yeah, they claimed his work called for him to travel.
Yeah, uh-huh. You know, it's hard for people to get a job that are close to this case in this Orlando thing. So if he's got a job, good for him. And I hope the job sneaking information
out. I think he's got a day job, I know. He does have a day job, but
it's his night.
I think he just wants to avoid it as much as he can.
It's the night job he has that scares me, Dave. That night job, dark job. Them's wants to scare me.
Don't blame him for not wanting to work.
Job,
genetic.
Is this like father, like son?
There you go.
Worse. The apples don't fall far from the tree unless it's passing by a train and ends up in another city. But I'm going to tell you something. If the daddy's bad and the apple's still there at the bad daddy tree, the son has got that wisdom plus all the other wisdom he can come up with. So, yeah, I'd say it's worse. So whatever evils the dad is, the son could be a lot worse.
All right. We are definitely winding the clock down here. Dave, what is coming up court-wise?
Well, I think there's a status hearing. I don't remember the date because I generally don't go to the status hearings. I think there are some outstanding motions, and the one that no one paid any attention to was one that was filed last Thursday, I think it was, the week before. And I think it was it's about the where is it? I got to find it. If I can.
We're late on the root and the chloroform rulings. They were.
Yeah,
promised.
No, it's another one. Hang on a second.
And they skipped the status hearing last week, so I guess they're just punting to next Friday. But unless they decide to move it up because they missed one last week. And that,
well, I'm going to look here. There's something
the only
that,
motion I remember from last week was the one where Bozo and Baez are, and Mason are still trying to say that even though the mental health experts are out, somehow what they looked at, thought about, whatever, is still admissible. I mean, there's some inscrutable motion. And then there was another one filed right at the end, after the one we heard on the trunk stains, the defense filed a motion, which I don't know if anybody's released. It's just sort of going to say, you know, we want a rehearing. We want you to change your mind. Like they seem to have a knee-jerk reaction every time they lose one. They just file, how about we ask again? Like the answer's going to change.
Okay, folks, we're down to the last minute. We're about to lose our live listeners. I do want to go around the table, though, and get everyone's parting thoughts for the week. I'm going to start with Cobra. He always has something deep and philosophical for us.
Boy, you got me. You got me on that one, brother man. Well, I don't think that the jury selection is going to be done in 5 days. I believe it's going to be closer to 3.5 weeks. And I think there's going to be some glitches thrown into the thing as we get closer to it. And I still maintain, as I did last time, it's not going to be any penalty.
Yeah, there is a glitch, as a matter of fact.
See there?
Okay, Dave.
Yeah. Well, it was a response to, it was filed on the 15th, response to judicial inquiry. And what the defense is basically saying is that, remember when the judge says, okay, we'll go where we're going to go, find a jury. If we can't see the jury there, we're going to come back to Orlando to seat one here. And if we can't get one here, we'll go to another county. And that second one that the judge mentioned was coming back to Orange County was like, no. The defense on the 15th filed a response to judicial inquiry. And it's explaining why you can't change, that you cannot grab a jury from Orlando. You can't get them from here. Because Judge Strickland had already ruled on that, and that you can't get a jury. There's no way she could get a fair trial from here. I think that that's going to be one of those thorns that's going to come in if they can't see the jury elsewhere. And I can see the defense fighting a jury anywhere they go initially, and then using this so that they can't get one from here. And that's the way it's going to have to go.
And Jen.
Justice for Kaylee. I keep wanting to say Haley. Justice for Kaylee. And Haley, really.
I want to thank everyone for taking part in the program today. And I also want to wish everyone a happy and safe Easter. This case is driving both Jan and I completely insane, or more insane than we were before. But we will continue to cover it, and I'm sure we'll be back again next week. And until then, this is Simon and Jen Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe day. Goodbye.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
Bye. Happy Easter.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.